everyone, and welcome to episode 7 of the Well and Wild podcast. I just want to start by saying a huge thank you to everyone who's been listening so far. I continue to receive such lovely messages from you, telling me about how some of the episodes and the guests have inspired you to go and take up a kind of side hobby or start a business venture on the side of your job. And I think that's just really amazing to see. And this is the real reason why I started all of this. I just wanted to highlight some of the ways that people have acknowledged that what they were doing wasn't necessarily for them, and the steps that they've taken to navigate onto a path that really makes them happy. And I just felt that there was such a lack of people talking about this, like, very early stage and what to do when you're like, I'm not really sure whether what I'm doing is really for me anymore. I think I want to do this. And no one really kind of talks about that stage. So that's really what I'm trying to do by having these guests on this podcast. I'm trying to focus on that stage so that if you're somebody out there who feels like that, you then know what kind of things you could do to explore that path. So I feel really grateful to be able to share these inspirational stories with you. And I also wanted to just give you a reminder that my event is in 10 days. I'm really, really excited. It's called Take Charge. The ticket link is in the show notes. It's going to be a goals workshop led by me, a nutrition coaching session led by my friend Hayley. And also there'll be a networking opportunity as well for you to meet new people. And this event is really great and designed for people who are feeling a little bit stuck or at a crossroads in your life. We're halfway through the year, so it's a really great opportunity to sit down, set some goals, get your nutrition back on track, or learn a little bit more about nutrition perhaps. So yeah, the link is in the show notes if you are interested in coming. So today we have an incredibly impressive lady on. I actually met her at an event, which is so fascinating. So in January, I went to a goals workshop organized by Lululemon, actually. And Meg turned around to me at the very start, and I thought she was going to... It was all quite a sort of serious environment, everyone getting into their sort of motivational head and thinking deeply about things that they want to set for their lives. You know, that kind of feeling in January when everyone's like, right, what's my year going to look like? And you're super motivated. Meg turned around. I thought she was going to introduce herself to me, but she just said, "Oh my God, I'm so hungover." And at that point, I just thought, oh, I knew we're going to be friends. We did chat more in the event, and it was just fascinating to be able to say such sort of personal things to a stranger that you only met like half an hour ago. And there were some things there that I said to her, you know, that I wanted to do in 2019 that I probably hadn't shared with some of my best friends. And that really was liberating, and it really sort of showed to myself that these things are things, serious things that I wanted to do, because at that point, you know, I was willing to say it out loud to a stranger. So some of these big things, like quitting my job on things like that, were serious goals of mine. And I think just that event of saying it out loud and writing it down really helped me commit to some of those goals that I set. So Meg was a part of my journey back then. She's just such a fascinating person. So her story is a little different to the guests I've had on so far. So she does have a corporate job, but she absolutely loves it. But she also has a passion for powerlifting, which is, I just think, so cool, because if you saw Meg, she doesn't necessarily look like a stereotypical powerlifter. And I just love that that's what she does, and she absolutely loves it. So she has a solid training schedule and competes regularly. And there's so much that comes with being a powerlifter, like things like nutrition, to make sure you stay within the right weight bracket. And we chat all about that and how she fell into powerlifting, and also just how she needs to be super organized to balance both her job and her love of powerlifting. And I think her story highlights that you can have a life outside of work that isn't just Love Island and boozy brunches. And I think a lot of people have corporate jobs, and some of you out there, you might not like it at all, in which case it's probably better for you to think of another path that you want to be on. But some of you might quite like it, but there might be a few areas of your life that it isn't satisfying. And could you tick those areas from something on the side, either a business or a hobby? And it could be a sport, it could be music, it could be art, it could be anything. And I think it's really interesting to listen to Meg, because she found something that she loves to do. So she's competitive, she's a very sort of go, go, go personality. And she recognized this, and she had a love of sport at uni, and I'm familiar with that. And when you have a love of sport at uni, it just slots into your life. And I think it probably benefits your life in a lot of ways that you don't really realize back then. But when you lose that sport, or you lose that thing that you used to enjoy doing when you move to a corporate job, which is quite common, I think it does leave a gap in your life. So I think Meg's story just really is good to highlight how she kind of fills in some of the gaps that maybe an office job can't physically give you. So when you listen to this, I think it's important to just remember, what hobbies did you have when you were younger? Did you play a sport? Were you arty? Did you play an instrument or love music or something like that? And just think to yourself, do you do any of those things now? And if you don't, why don't you do them anymore? Is there a specific reason stopping you, or did you just kind of like, did it just drop off at some point when more, you know, responsible things took over, like having a career? And just take a moment to think, would it make you more happy if you started doing it again? So, you know, if the answer to that is yes, maybe, and I think it probably is, just go on your phone today and look up that kind of sports club in your local area, or lessons in the instrument, or like clubs or something like that. There's so many communities out there. You just need to go and have a little search and just book it in and see how it goes. If you don't like it, what's the worst that can happen? You just don't go again. But the best that could happen is you go, you really enjoy it, you meet some new people, and it starts fulfilling something in your life that was missing. So that's just something that I want to say before this episode starts. You don't all have to go and pick up powerlifting, although I think that's pretty cool if you do. But just as Meg's talking, just think about those hobbies that you had, and maybe you could learn a little bit from Meg on how she's kind of balancing her job and her passion for powerlifting. So enough from me. Here's today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. Welcome, Meg. It's so good to have you on. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Of course. Yeah. Glad to have you on. So if you could start by telling the listeners a little bit about yourself. I think it's really interesting, as you're the first guest we've got on who's actually working in the corporate world, but also has a serious side thing going on with your powerlifting, which is super cool. So it'd be great to learn a little bit more about your background story and how you ultimately kind of came to find powerlifting. Big question.
How I came to find powerlifting. Okay, so I've always been super, super competitive, always throwing a lot of time into sport. And I think powerlifting is just kind of a continuation on of what I've always been doing. So when I was little, like every little girl gets taken to dance school. My mum took me to dance school and I was like, that's it, we're competing, we're going to be training 12 hours a week. And my mum was like, ooh, okay. So I danced properly, I guess, as properly as any child can, from a ripe young age to when I was about 16 or 17 and A-levels took over a bit. And then, yeah, A-levels, did not quite breeze through them, but let's pretend I did breeze through my A-levels, quite nice, got into university. And then at university, I didn't like the dance team. I met them and thought, you're not my kind of people. So instead, I thought I would try something else. And I tried cheerleading. You all thought I was about to say powerlifting then, didn't you? Oh, no.
I love the contrast.
So I tried cheerleading. Cheerleading? I guess cheerleading is kind of similar in some ways. You do lift things up. They just happen to be people rather than bars. but it's different in other ways as well. And then so I graduated, I moved to London, I started this adult job, and which, by the way, I absolutely love. To anyone who's working with me, I absolutely love working, so that's super cool.
I think
cool.
That's really good to note that you found something you love, which I think is amazing, because often this doesn't happen or it takes years to find, so I think that's really great.
Yeah, I really love it. And then after work, I was trying to find what I was meant to do with my after work time, because my whole time prior to that had been taken over by dancing or whatever. So I started going to the gym to get super fit, because I was like, let's get super fit, I've got time. Instagram's calling me, joking. So I went, and it was originally more about getting healthy and slightly stronger, but I didn't expect to get so strong. And then I met my coach, and things have gone, I guess, from one strength to the other, and we'll see where we're at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. That's really, really interesting. So could you just talk a little bit about how you found your coach? Because I think that story is like really quite like funny, and I just love how you just said yes and jumped in.
Okay, so basically I hate cardio. I think this should be noted and go down in history. Like, Meg and cardio are not friends. But I always wanted to try boxing, because it's just like, it's so cool. Like, when you see them box, and I don't know, the 2012 Olympics got me on the boxing hype, and I don't think I've come off of the boxing hype. I'm like, that is the coolest sport. Like, I wish I could box. So I went to a boxing class, and, I put my all in for however long it was, 45 minutes, and I was absolutely dead, absolutely knackered. And afterwards, the guy leading the class came over to me and was like, if I was to enter you into a powerlifting competition, would you train and compete with me? And I literally just went, yes. And that was that. It was so good. It was like, you're clearly not a boxer. Yeah.
I would have been like, I'm not even really sure what powerlifting is.
Well, I kind of knew what it was, because when you go to the gym a lot, because I was spending, well, I do spend about 12 hours in the gym every week. So I kind of, you can see which guys are training for competitions. So you kind of get a gist of like what to expect. I must confess.
So is it one of those kind of gyms that is a little bit more like a fighting gym, like a little bit?
100% not. Oh, okay. I train at a fitness first, which is definitely a health club. But there are quite a few of us in the gym who are training for competitions, so it's quite a nice vibe, because it's a good balance. It's not like, it's not so scary. Like, my university gym, I was terrified of going to the weights area, because all the cardio was on the top floor, and then you had to go down some stairs into the weights area, and like most of the people in weights areas are men. So it was like you just descended down into, like, I don't know, an aroma of testosterone. But Fitness First isn't like that at all. Like, it's not scary. It is just a gym. And I actually now quite like going down into a bit more meat-heady gyms. But that's just because, I don't know, I think I've got over this initial scariness.
Yeah. I think I want to pick up on something that you said, which I think really resonates with me. So when you go to uni and you've kind of got your own routine, but not, and you're kind of just doing everything at once, especially if you're sporty and training for a sports team, it does seem like a really odd shift when you move to corporate, and then you've suddenly got this really structured routine that's like 9 to 5, or even like 8 to 6 in London, I suppose.
Yeah.
And like you said, you had a few free hours in the evening and stuff. And I just think, how did you feel at that time when you suddenly were shoved into this routine? Yeah, granted, you really liked your job, but it can be really weird to just go from that uni setting of having your own time be yours and you manage that how you want to then this real structure. It sounds like you kind of felt like something was missing a little bit, which then I guess powerlifting filled that gap. But is that kind of right?
Yeah, so I guess the main thing, I don't really know how to like vocalize this, so I'm super sorry if you're like, Meg, you're just saying random words. But I think I'm a person who absolutely loves a routine. Like, I love routine. So I was super excited to actually get back into a routine where I didn't have to think about the routine for however many hours I actually end up working every day. But yeah, it's, London's a super bizarre place, especially if you're straight out of university, because your friends don't all just suddenly move to London. Like, you're not just picked up out of your wherever you went to university and put in London and it's all the same dynamic and everything. It's super duper different. Like, first of all, it's a trickle, and I was one of the first friends to actually get to London. So when I got here, I literally knew no one, which was super interesting. Now, luckily, I think most of my friends, bar one or two, have all done the migration to London, which is good. But yeah, it's, I feel like you can't just sit in pubs every night after work. I mean, if you do, good for you. But I, personally, like, I couldn't sit in a pub every night after work and catch up or meet new people. Like, that's just not my vibe.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think the gym was definitely like a safe place, and gyms are super social. So I did actually get to meet a really good bunch of friends. Yeah, if they're listening, they know who they are.
Oh, no, that's really cool. And I think if you're one of those personality types who, you know, throws their all into everything, especially when you have a corporate job and you're working really hard and it could be pressured, having something on the side where you can just let off steam is amazing. And I think a lot of people resort to alcohol for that. But
yeah,
there's the other alternative of like a sport and training and letting off steam in the gym, or like,
yeah,
more specific thing.
Honestly, I still go to that boxing class. It's like in the middle of the day on a Tuesday, and I just go and I just whack things, and I'm like, okay, I can go back to work now. Like, everything's okay.
Oh, amazing. So tell us a little bit more how powerlifting actually works. So I'm assuming you train to be able to just lift as heavy as you possibly can in one rep, right? So in competition, yeah, sometimes you'd lift PBs, but then other times you won't lift PBs, and it's what you can lift on the actual day of the competition, right?
Yeah, so it's only what you can lift while you're there.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. So there are three lifts: a squat, a bench press, and a deadlift. They're like pretty, I guess, fundamental gym lifts, and you can walk into any gym and there will probably always be someone performing one of them, because they're just, I guess they're the original reason why people go to the gym.
Yeah, even I've done those.
Yeah, like,
and I'm not a powerlifter.
It is pretty simple. Yeah, so then you're split into your weight category. So yeah, I have to stay roughly in my five kilogram band. Well, I have to stay exactly in my 5 kilogram band because I don't want to go over, and then have to compete in a band heavier because they lift heavier, and that would be very bad for the competitive side of me. But also they split you by age. So I'm currently a super, super awkward age, because I'm the year that I go from being able to compete as a junior to being able to having to compete in open. So it just means that the competition gets tougher. And yeah, I'm not sure if I'm completely ready for that. And I think there's a lot of like, earlier I said something along the lines of like, we'll see what happens at the end of the year. And that's exactly it, because as soon as I have to switch, there could be, the competitive side of me could not be very happy for a while, because there are adults that I'm competing against.
But then, yeah, that would be insane if you could beat some of these people ultimately. Like, yeah, it might take time, but like, the reward at stake is huge.
Yeah, no, that's so true. But yeah, the initial switch is gonna be, I think, a shock to my system. Yeah. But also a super motivational shock, right? Because the moment someone tells me that I can't do something, I'm there trying to do it. So
yeah, exactly.
Hopefully it will all be fine.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. And what do you love about powerlifting? Like, because like it sounds, you kind of fell into it and you just said yes, and I just love that. But what have you realized that you really enjoy about the whole, and I guess it's kind of a lifestyle as well, so the sport and the lifestyle.
So sport wise I love testing myself. So, you know, there's a really funny story. I guess it's not that funny, but I walked into a doctor's surgery. I've got asthma, which is like supposedly like hindering, but mine isn't that bad. So mine's pretty decent. Like I can just get away with just taking an inhaler and being completely fine most of the time. So I was getting my regular checkup with this doctor, and she goes, "So how much do you weigh right now?" And I literally go, "Well, I've not eaten breakfast. I reckon I'm 61.7 kilograms.
Very precise.
And she goes, "Yeah, that's exactly what she said." She was like, "What? Okay." And then I stood on the scales and I was 61.7 kilograms. And she just kind of looked at me and I was like, "Well, I know myself." So I think that's one of the biggest things. Like, I know when there's something wrong with me now, just by the way that I'm breathing, or like I'm very conscious of what is going on the whole time with my body, which means that I'm able to push myself further, which is super, super good. And I really, really like that. That's a huge bonus about the sport. Social life. Oh my God. It's actually really good. Obviously I met you. I've met so many people, just because I go to events and say, "Hey, I'm Meg, I'm a powerlifter. I don't really look that big, but I am."
inside.
Yeah. there's a Hulk inside of me.
Yeah.
I've met loads of amazing people, and yeah, I mean, we met at an event, but also in my own gym I've met a huge amount of great people, so that's super cool.
And I guess with the sport as well, it's like you say, you're really competitive, and I think it's a good one for immediate feedback, I suppose, because you can either do it or you can't.
And you literally can't
at all times, and there's like minimum amounts of things that you need to do, I'm guessing, as opposed to like something really tactical like tennis or something like that. Like powerlifting, you know where you're at, and
So the good thing is basically you are completely in control. I guess that was kind of where I was heading with my first point. So there's no huge external factors. So like, yeah, tennis, if the wind blows and it messes you up, that's kind of not your fault, like whatever. Powerlifting, I mean, there are things that can not go your way, but ultimately it's you, it's the bar, and like it's all on you. And you know what you can do roughly, because it's not like you've not trained for it. So you go in, you know that you can do the lift, or you think, "Oh, this is a bit above what I normally do," and you just gotta embrace it and set yourself up strong.
And why do you think you said yes on that day when he asked you to get involved in that boxing class? Because I just love the contrast between cheerleading and powerlifting. I just think that's brilliant. What do you think made you say yes? Because I think a lot of people would sort of go away and think, "Oh, well, it's not ready for me. I'm like intimidated, you know?"
Okay. So I was toying with the idea of competing, but I was toying with the idea of competing in bikinis, which, if you don't know, is like bodybuilding, but it's more about looking good in a bikini kind of thing. So I was toying with that idea, and then I'd done a lot of reading, and there was a lot of, all I ate was cucumber for 6 months.
Yeah,
and
I was just really like, dangerous.
Yeah, I just thought, I can't, like, I am too competitive. Like, if that was me, I would only be eating cucumber. Like,
yeah.
I'm sure you can't live on just cucumber, so these people don't just live on miserable. Cucumber. But, yeah, they must be miserable. It must suck. I love food. So, it definitely came at the right time, because otherwise I probably would have gone for the physique kind of route. So
yeah, I think that's such an interesting point as well, because I personally, so I used to be really sporty before I moved to London, and I was so competitive, and that was like really my passion. But then when I moved to London, I didn't really play sport anymore for whatever reason. And I realized that like I wanted to go to the gym to get back to like being fit and healthy and stuff, but I couldn't get the motivation to go purely for like that reason, like to look good or to feel healthier. Like I couldn't, that wasn't enough for me. It's almost like I need a competitive side of it. So it's like picking up a sport again, then I'll go to the gym to get better and win more, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So maybe that's similar with you.
So I was, so despite being super, super like competitive and still training at university, I lost my way a bit. I was very good at eating food that was not good for me. So
this happened to me too in corporate.
I think it happens to everyone at some point. Is you just, you're not 100, like at university it's very, very, very hard to be 100% sure of yourself, especially in your final year where you don't know, you know, you've done 3 years in a bubble of student life where you can get away with not earning money or earning minimal money and still going out every night and somehow managed to get a degree and like it's very strange. And then so I think that it was the lack of structure and then the uncertainty of where I was going to end up, because I knew I wanted to move to London, I did know that, but I did not, until 4 months after I graduated, I didn't know that I was actually coming to London. And that was quite, I don't know, I was partying as hard as I could, whether that was to deal with the uncertainty or whether, because I thought this could end at any time, I've got to make the most of it. So the initial coming into the gym was actually, hold on, I need to get my body working properly again, because otherwise it's just going to start, I'm going to end up in the liver disease, I'm going to...
It's true.
Yeah.
But it's this weird thing where alcohol suddenly sort of, I think, fills a gap for a lot of people. And it is just like, I mean, at uni, we kind of learn it, I guess, like it's the culture.
Yeah.
And then when you move to London or you move to like an adult job, as you put it, like you then, it's always there, this default to like just going out and like having fun and getting hammered, because if you don't know what else you want to do and you don't know how else to spend your time, it's always there. And I think a lot of people then fall into that routine and it's not necessarily fulfilling them like deeply, and so people can lose their way. And I guess like
and when it stops
fulfill you as alcohol, much as you
100%. So when it stops fulfilling you, you kind of get put into a negative feedback circle if you don't know if you don't know what you're doing, because you just
and then you do it more to make yourself feel better, and then you feel bullshit.
It's just bad.
I definitely see what you mean. And I guess with your finding powerlifting and stuff, that fills the gap, so you don't feel the need to drink so much, which is exactly the same as my experience so far. So me leaving the corporate world and like starting my own business has meant that I just naturally haven't craved going out so much anymore. Like I'm not saying I don't drink at all, but because I, you know, enjoy old glass of wine, or I love going to the pub, but it's not like that is literally what the weekend is for now, and I couldn't imagine doing anything else. I don't feel the need to do it anymore. So I think I did have a bit of an unhealthy relationship with it. So
I totally agree. So I went out this weekend for the first time in quite a while, and I had the best time because it'd been so long, and I just danced and I had fun, and I wasn't so drunk that I couldn't remember anything. Like I was perfect on the right level, had the best time ever. But at the same time, because I've had that experience now, I can't replicate that for a couple of weeks, because the hype loses itself, I find. I never used to find that, but now I'm like, you know, I need one good night a month, I'm satisfied.
So. Yeah, exactly. And it's dealing with the lows of the hangover the next day, that if you have that too much, that can just consume you.
Definitely.
It's such an interesting point though, this whole alcohol thing. So many people are talking about it at the moment. Okay, so it would be also really interesting hear more about the fact that you've obviously got your corporate job that you love, but then you've got this on the side. So how would you say that having the routine of powerlifting and a sport that you're dedicated to, how do you think it helps you at work?
How it helps me at work? So I guess the first thing to note is it has made me, well, hasn't made me. It has defined me more as a planner. So I've always planned everything anyway. But I now find that if I don't plan out everything, then sort of nothing gets done. And I just end up sitting on my bed thinking that my legs hurt for the whole day. So I have to plan everything pretty meticulously, especially while I'm at work, because otherwise I don't eat what I need to eat. So everything from what I'm doing and what I'm eating perspectives get planned in advance. It is super good because it means at work, I am one of the lucky people who saw in her contract that I'm meant to work 7.5 hours a day. So I say, right, so I'm going to work 8 hours a day, whatever I feel like working. Like, it's always above 7.5 hours. But at the point that I've decided I'm going to walk out, I just walk out, because I have other stuff to do with my evening that's on this list. And if I do not cross it off, I do not get the satisfaction of knowing that I've done everything. So, yeah, so you'll probably find me leaving work pretty much dead on 5:45.
I think that's really good, though. A lot of people don't have the confidence to do it realistically. Well, I mean, sometimes you can't pack it all in, but realistically, I'm sure we all could say we could be a bit more if we wanted to.
So, yeah, so I lock my phone in a locker outside the office every day. So I get to work, I sit at the computer, I'm actually working. I'm not shopping, I'm not on Facebook, I'm not on Twitter. Like, the temptation obviously is there, but I'm there to work. I just put my headphones on, I work, I get my stuff done, and I leave. And I read this, I can't remember what book it was in, but I've read loads of management books since joining London, because my boss loves reading, so he assigns us a book every month to read, and we have to read it. And there was this one about this Japanese boss, and the guy said his boss had once told him that if he can't get the work done in his hours that he's contracted for, he's going to be fired because he's not efficient enough to do the job. And I thought, actually, that's not bad life advice. Like, the way it's executed it probably is bad. Like, he probably shouldn't have told the guy that he's going to be fired if he's not efficient. But the concept behind being able to do your work in your hours definitely, I think, is something that everyone should take on board a bit, because, you know, nobody's going to die if they don't know, I don't know, whatever you're doing. It's very rare that you're in a position where, well, in the corporate world, if you're a nurse or whatever and there's someone like bleeding out, please don't just walk away because it's after hours. But but my job, honestly, the worst that's going to happen is I do it tomorrow morning. And I know that, and it will get done. And I think everyone in my team is very, very conscious that, yeah, we can just leave and come and do it the next day. So
that's really good that you have that kind of culture, though. I think that's really amazing, because I think some other companies, I mean, some other companies I'm familiar with, definite sort of FaceTime pressure after hours, and people conform to that, the worse it gets, kind of thing.
Yeah, I think actually that's a culture thing that comes from the employees rather than the senior management of a company. Because if you just get that one person going, oh, I'm going to stay until my boss finishes, then that triggers the whole company thinking that. Because especially if you're like middle management and you think that. So if you're middle management, you're waiting for your boss to go home, and everyone knows that you're waiting for your boss to go home, then all the people that you manage thinks this is what he likes. So then they stay late, and that whole, the whole culture develops like from just one person, really. And it sucks to put it all on one person, but like, if everybody just said, I'm not staying in, then the whole culture would change instantly.
Yeah, and so, in reality, think how happier everybody would be if they got their work done in less hours and had more of an evening, and then they can
100%. Yeah, come to the gym with me.
Okay, so you mentioned a lot about kind of your eating patterns and things like that. And I know we've chatted about this before, and you've got to be super organized and things.
Oh, yeah.
Your routine. So could you go into a bit more detail about that? So the things that you need to do, I guess, outside of actually lifting a weight.
Outside. Yeah, so I guess actually I spend a lot of time thinking about food, and then I spend a lot of time eating food. It's kind of something that we require to be alive, but I am a bit meticulous, so I have got to eat about 115 grams of protein a day at the moment. Wow. If you're listening to this and you don't powerlift and you're like, geez, how much do I eat? The NHS recommends about 60 grams a day, so if you're not doing huge insane sporting activity, just go on to nhs.co.uk and work out what you're meant to be having. And
it must be difficult to eat that much.
So it's definitely double what I was eating before, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And because I don't calorie count, because I don't need to at the moment. Yeah. Obviously I say it like that because I am in a weight categorized sport, so there might be a time where I do need to calorie count to get a calorie deficit to move down a weight category. But at the moment, I'm happy as I am. I'm not looking to do that. So I have to eat about 115 grams of protein a day without feeling super full and lethargic, which is very, 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 very hard. So if, like, just putting it into perspective, roughly, like, don't quote me on these. It's not exact. But, like, if you think, a egg has 10 grams of protein, so I'm talking about eating 11 eggs in a day, which just by itself sounds like a lot. So it's a ridiculous amount of food, but it has meant that before I was just eating what I wanted and getting away with it because I was burning it all off in the gym because I'm young and I can still do that, but now I have to really, really think about what I'm going to eat, because I don't want to spend the whole day either feeling hungry before the next meal or feeling so full after a meal that I can't move.
Yeah, I hate that feeling.
I hate that feeling, but I'm also a grazer, so I need to eat constantly throughout the day in order to feel satisfied, which means, like, yeah, I just pick up, like, I don't know. Oh, my housemate. So I live with a guy who's training for a similar thing at the moment, and he's just started eating tuna out of a tin raw. He did it the first time, and I was like, "That's awful." And now I'm like, "Hold on, that's quite a good snack." So
efficiency.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. But I do. So yesterday I spent 3 hours planning the next 3 weeks of food, so I know exactly what I'm going to eat when for the next 3 weeks. Obviously I can go off my plan, like, I'm not, like, super crazy. I do like having a social life. Social lives tend to involve food. So I know what I'm going to eat for 3 weeks. I know that I'm going to get my protein. I know that I'm going to definitely be full and have enough snacks, and everything is super, super, super good. But it is a lot of food.
And the fundamentals of eating so much protein, is that so that you can maintain your weight in the category that you're in, but also, I guess, like, helping with muscle, like, growth and recovery? Is that kind of
So the main thing is muscle growth and recovery. I'm not a nutritionist, just putting it out there, but I have read a lot. Like, I've probably read more about nutrition than a lot of people on Instagram.
I'm sure you want to be nutritious while you're eating this amount.
Well, 100%. And I wanted to make sure that I was getting the right type.
Yeah.
So basically, you probably hear quite a lot about amino acids being, like, tied to proteins and whatever on Instagram, and people don't really know what they're talking about. But different kinds of proteins basically have different kinds of uses in your body. So you want to be getting a whole mix of proteins. It's like vegetables, right? You eat the rainbow because each different color has different goodness. Same with proteins. So, you know, you need a mix. You can't, people who just eat chicken and rice really annoy me, because you're not getting your mix of proteins or your mix of grains. That's a bad diet. eat better food. I'm a big fan of pork. I'm a big fan of beef and a big fan of chicken. But I also know that I should eat lamb at some points as well, because even though I don't like it as much, it's got a different set of protein in, which would have would contribute, I guess, to a different type of recovery, which I probably need without even really knowing that I need it. So it's important to not just sit and eat, I don't know, baked beans because they've got protein in the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, you got to mix it up. So yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting. I didn't actually kind of realize that.
It's something that no one realizes. I was talking to I think he's a fellow at a university in Germany about this, about different proteins. And he was the one that said that he'd done all this research and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, goodbye.
Yeah. Oh.
Learned a lot that day.
Yeah, I bet. So do you have days when you sometimes just don't feel like it? And how do you cope with that? How do you kind of switch your mindset?
Okay, so I have days where I don't feel like eating what I've planned to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Those days, I tend to just think, okay, when it comes to food, let's just say I'm not going to eat what I've said. Let's, you know, order a curry and just get it over with, get it out of my system, because otherwise that grows. When it comes to the gym, I don't have days like that anymore. I used to all the time. But I think when you start going to the gym, it's this huge thing. You're going to the gym. And, you know, you pack separate clothes. You think about when you're going to shower. And there's all these, like, factors that you have to consider in your head. I now just kind of see it as, like, part of my day. It's like brushing my teeth. I don't think about my toothbrush or my toothpaste or how long I'm gonna stand at the sink, you know. Like, I just go. And the days that I'm like, oh, maybe today I should actually just go home and rest because I don't feel like it, they're the days that I have the best workouts, because I get there and I'm like, right, Meg, let's make the most of this, let's see if we can do something good to justify why we're here, and then let's go home and rest. So I think, yeah, I've stopped getting that, that huge,
So not overthinking it then, just doing it.
Yeah, 100%. Just have a bag that's always packed. I never unpack my bag. Yeah,
make it easy.
I just pull the clothes out, put new clothes in, but everything else, so my lifting shoes, my supplements, my everything, my skipping rope, everything else is just packed in the bag, ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, good tips. And do you have any tips for people who basically, I think your story really helps for people who maybe were really sporty at uni, or they had something that they really loved, and maybe since they moved to a corporate job or an adult job in the city, whatever, they don't really do it anymore. But they're realizing that actually they kind of missed that, and there's a bit of a gap in their life. So do you have any tips for people who would like to balance a kind of sporting hobby with a job, and they're kind of reluctant to because they don't think they can fit it in, or they don't have the energy?
So I think there are loads of schemes, especially in London, to bring sport to adults. So there's a great netball league that I'm part of on Monday nights called Mammoth,
I've heard of that one.
They do netball, they do football, they've got all kinds of things that go all over London. You don't need a team, you just need yourself, and you sign up at the start of a league and you get assigned a team and you just play when you fancy it. That's a really nice way of getting yourself to sport. I actually do mine through my job, so that sort of makes it easier because I go with like colleagues.
Yeah.
Which is quite a good way of bonding.
And people could start that at their work if they, 100%. You know, if there wasn't one.
Yeah, so I think if you want to play a sport you already know you love, that's a great way of getting back into it, because it's just fun. If you used to play a sport and now you don't play it and you miss it, why aren't you playing the sport? Just find it somewhere. And just say, you know what, I'm going to do this for 6 weeks. And if you still love it after that 6 weeks and you still want to play, then you should still be playing. If not, then you fall into the category of, I used to play sport and I miss playing sport, but I don't necessarily want to play the sport that I played. Then yeah. I think, which is kind of where I was, you need to find something that you actually love. And it really might not be the thing that you think, because there is no way, if you asked me 3 years ago, if I would ever be lifting yeah. weights up, let alone powerlifting, I would have probably laughed in your face. So yeah. I think, yeah, just give everything that you get the opportunity to try, a proper try. And if an opportunity hits you, like someone just turning around saying, do you want to compete? Don't say no, say yes, because
yeah,
you know, you might think at some points, oh my God, why did I agree to this? But actually, in the long run, like, it's going to be so much fun and you're going to meet some amazing people. And yeah, it's just super cool to be able to say that, you know, I do what I do to you. I've met the people that I've met, and hopefully one day I'm going to compete in big competitions.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I can't wait to see that. Really great advice. And I am loving, I think there is a bit of a shift as well when it comes to girls in sport. And it used to be there was really just the place for women in sport who were like really at the top of their game, top athletes. And even then it was like, there's all the inequalities in that. But there was a bit of a stigma with like just normal everyday girls getting involved in sport, but I'm definitely seeing a bit of a shift. And even I was saying to one of my friends the other day, she is just moved over from Australia and she's just joined like an Aussie rules football club, like a girls one, and half of them don't even compete, they just go to the training, and it's just like a really great community vibe. And I just think that is just so cool.
Yeah, I think actually the community around sport is one of the most attractive factors of doing a sport, and I think it's totally overlooked. So I that's definitely something that everyone should experience. If you've not experienced it, then you should try and just go down to a sports club on a Saturday afternoon and see the craziness that goes on, because everyone's yeah. having fun and you know, they're socializing, and it's a different kind of fun to the sat in the pub fun.
Yeah, exactly. And you can have that bit as well, because you go and socialise with them as well. But you've got some extra. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I think that's really good advice. I think when you said about trying out different things, that's a really good point. Like, just go and try something and see what resonates with you or what you enjoy. And that might be powerlifting.
Who knows?
Yeah. Okay. And so, well, that's kind of us coming up to time now, really. We've got a little short fire round that I normally do. So three short questions. And the first one is, what is the best book you've ever read?
Ooh. Way to put me on the spot there.
Yeah, on the spot. You've got two more coming as well.
Oh, that's such a hard question. I'm an avid reader. I reckon...
Are you looking at your bookshelf right now?
I actually am looking at my bookshelf right now. I just turned around to see it. I reckon... I just finished a really good book called Factfulness. I'm not sure if it's the best one that I've ever read, but it is the one that's just sticking in my mind. So I'm just going to say it. It's about things about the world that you didn't think were true. Which is kind of interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. I'll add it to the show notes. And as this podcast is called the Well and Wild Podcast, what do you think the wildest thing is that you've ever done?
The wildest thing that I've ever done? Cool, blimey. You've got tough questions.
I've got the answer to that already.
I think the what? Me?
Yeah, saying yes to powerlifting after...
Oh, no, I don't think that's the wildest thing.
I feel that's cool. Okay.
I think the wildest thing I have ever done was... Oh, my family hired a car, right, in Australia. And my dad was driving it off-road. And we got out at one point because we kind of got a bit stuck at a 90-degree angle. Right, very long story. but there was snakes. And I was like, snakes. So I ran to the sea. I think that was quite wild.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a rogue story.
Super deadly out there.
With absolutely no context, so that's going to sound really strange. But yeah, you know.
You know, there's sea snakes as well.
Yeah, I was conscious of that, but at the time there were like land snakes.
So it's like, which land do I go for? Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. That'll do, definitely.
I think that's
pretty wild. Still think saying yes to powerlifting is pretty wild.
I think that was more just crazy.
Okay, and then finally, what's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
I think the best piece of advice that I've ever been given is to turn my phone off.
Oh, good one.
I am very, very, very good at overthinking anything. I'm not just talking about people texting me and me being like, oh, what should I reply? Or people not texting me and me being like, when are they going to reply? Like, if you say to me something about something else that's really like worrying or whatever, I then start Googling it, which makes the whole situation worse. So it's best to just, you know, turn your phone off and live in the moment and all that. So
I love that. People normally say something, you know, philosophical, but like, turn your phone off, that is really, really a good one. And I think
I have a philosophical one as well, if you want it. My philosophical philosophical one is that it's very hard to die alone because most people end up in an old people's home.
Oh,
it's true though. That's kind of positive.
Yeah depends how you look at it. Yeah, look at it from a positive mindset.
I think it's quite positive.
Yeah. No, but back to the phone thing, though. I think that's a really cool tip. And I think it would affect a lot of people in a lot of positive ways. I always bang on about how you should either turn your phone off or at least put it on Do Not Disturb and turn a lot of the notifications off, because then you are in control of when you consume the content and when you see and you can choose when you're in the right mindset rather than stuff popping up. And one, that distracts you and makes you stressed, but two, also you might be in a bit of a vulnerable mindset at that point, and like, seeing stuff that you have no control over isn't going to help you out. So
yeah,
I think it's such a major thing that people can do.
100%. I totally agree. So,
cool. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Meg.
Thank you so much for having me.
Amazing discussion. And I think you're doing some really cool things. And I love how you're such a yes person. And I'm sure we're going to see a lot more of you in the powerlifting world. And I can't wait to come to one of your competitions. I'm being silly in the background.
I will invite you, so don't worry.
Would love that. Cool. Well, yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So that is the end of episode 7. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you want to find Meg on Instagram, you can follow her. It's Meg, TATEHH. And it's linked in the show notes. So I think that was an amazing episode. And like I said at the start, I think what we can all take away from Meg's story is that, yes, okay, Meg loves her corporate job, and some of you might not love your corporate job, but I think some of you might be out there feeling like, this doesn't feel quite right, this job that I have. But you don't necessarily know whether packing it all in and starting your business does feel right. Maybe it's just you're in the wrong job. And I think that is absolutely okay. And there are so many people that feel like that. But I think it's about then experimenting and trying to figure out, okay, what is the answer here? And the way to experiment is kind of trying to identify, right, what are my values in life? What type of person am I? And for example, Meg is very competitive. Often in a corporate job, there's only a few kind of jobs that can fulfill that need. So perhaps then she needs to get that fulfilled from another area of her life, powerlifting. And that might be the same for you. Maybe you're a creative and you love being creative, but perhaps your job doesn't really give you an opportunity to be creative. So what is it that you could start on the side that satisfies that need? Perhaps it's something you used to do when you were younger, but you no longer do. So I think it's just definitely worth having a think about this. And then if there's something that you're not doing now that you could be doing that you think could give you a little bit more fulfillment just generally in life, why not just go and give it a go? Just go and book it. Go on Google. It's so easy to find these things these days. And just book it in. And just see how you feel once you've done it. I think you'll feel amazing. I hadn't played tennis in about 10 years. Well, probably, yeah, 10 years. And I went and played tennis, last summer, actually. And I booked a block of lessons. And oh my God, I just had fun again. And I just remembered how much I love tennis. And it just improved my mood. And like, even when I was off the court. So I really just would say to go and do it. And let me know how it goes. But yeah, thank you so much for listening today. Oh, I would also love it if you're enjoying this podcast, if you could leave me a review on the platform that you're listening to it on. I think Apple Podcasts, you can definitely leave a review. I'm not sure that you can on Spotify. But if you can, do let me know. I tried to have a look the other day and it didn't look like you could. But if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please, please leave me a review. It's really helpful to add some credibility to my podcast. So when I'm reaching out to potential guests, when they're having a look and looking me up, it really helps to show that I do have listeners that are really enjoying the podcast, which means that they'll be more likely to say yes, which means that I'll be able to create more and more amazing episodes for you to listen to from some really inspirational guests. So thank you in advance for doing that. I really, really, really appreciate it. And I appreciate the time that you take to do that. And it doesn't take very long. I think it literally takes like a minute, 30 seconds a minute. But I just really, really appreciate you doing that because it really, really helps me get some great guests on for you. So that's it for this week. And I will speak to you next week. Thank you so much for listening. Have an amazing week.